A sleek 1950s Jaguar drives through the night on a glistening wet road. The titles appear. Romulus presents Lawrence Harvey, Gloria Graham, Richard Basehart, Joan Collins, John Ireland, Renee Ray, Stanley Baker, Margaret Leighton and Robert Morley in The Good Die Young. With Freda Jackson. Screenplay by Vernon Harris and Lewis Gilbert. From the novel The Good Die Young by Richard Macaulay. Music by George Orrick. Musical director Lambert Williamson. Filmed at Shepperton Studios. A Remus production. Associate producer Jack Clayton, directed by Lewis Gilbert. Miles Rave Ravenscourt, a man of about 30, sits at the wheel of the Jaguar. He has delicate, refined features and his dark eyes peer out into the night with an icy intensity. Beside him sits Mike, a slightly older man with a square jaw and a high forehead. He wears a tweed jacket and wool scarf tied over an open-necked shirt. In the back of the car sits Joe, in his mid-30s with neatly cut hair. And Eddie, a craggy-featured man, his dark hair slicked back.
Four men. Four men, each from a different walk of life. A clerk, an airman, a prize fighter, and a gentleman of leisure. A few weeks ago, they were strangers. Now, here, they are driving together. To what?
Why did you have to steal a car? You said we'd use yours.
This one's faster. That case on the floor, Mike. Open it.
Obeying Rave's instruction, Mike picks up the leather case. In the back, Joe and Eddie lean forward as Mike clicks open the locks. It's full of pistols.
What's this?
Rave hands a gun to Joe.
Yeah, what's the idea of the gun?
I thought you said no violence.
And Eddie. Mike picks up a gun.
I'm not going to use this, Rave.
If you'll do as you're told, you won't have to.
Joe pockets his gun nervously.
Four men with four guns. Why? This is Joe Halsey, American citizen, age 34, occupation clerk, ex-serviceman, no criminal record.
New York. Joe enters the office of his large, balding boss.
Come in. You wanted to see me. I have an appointment in a few minutes, so make it quick.
Okay. I'd like a week off, starting tomorrow.
What the blazes for?
Well, I have to go to England. I plan to fly.
How long have you been back with the firm, Halsey?
About 4 months.
And you were away in Korea for 2 years, right?
Yeah.
During which time your job was kept open for you. And during which time Wilkins took on your work as well as his own. Voluntarily and for no extra pay.
For which he's just been promoted. He's a clever guy, Wilkins. He's a really clever guy.
That sort of an attitude will get you nowhere, Halsey. It's stupid and ungrateful. What reason have you to go?
You just gotta go. Isn't that enough?
It most certainly is not.
Joe frowns and leans over the desk.
All right, Mr. Crothers. I've got a wife. I happen to be in love with her. 3 months ago, she went to England for 2 weeks. Her mother was sick. Well, she's still there, Mr. Crothers. Her mother's still sick, she says. I don't believe that, do you hear me? I don't believe it.
I'm sorry, Halsey, but this is a business organization. You seem to forget that you've just recently been absent for 2 years.
I seem to...
Joe's face is rigid with anger.
I seem to forget.
Now, Halsey.
Joe snatches up the receiver of the desk phone.
Give me Pan American Airlines.
Halsey, you're fired.
An airline touches down on the runway. In arrivals, Mary Halsey, a slim, attractive woman, her dark hair swept back from her face into a bun at the back of her head, checks the faces of the new arrivals. She spots Joe. She runs to him, and they embrace. They stand back and look at each other.
Hello, Mary.
Oh, it's good to see you. I only got your cable 2 hours ago. I couldn't believe it.
Maybe you didn't want to believe it.
What? Joe, what is it?
We can't talk here.
Darling, what's the matter?
You know what the matter is, all right.
But I don't.
You mean to tell me you're ready to come back with me on the next plane?
Well, not the next plane, Joe, but soon, when Mother's all right and...
And what?
Joe, not here. I don't...
And what? Come on, let's have it. Let's get it over with.
Well, it's just that I haven't been very well myself lately.
Oh, no.
It's nothing serious. I'm just going to have a baby, that's all.
Joe stares in disbelief, then breaks into a smile.
Oh, honey, it's...
Well, I'd have written and told you, but I thought I was coming home.
Ah, gee, baby, that's great. But come on, honey, let's go.
They arrive at Mrs. Freeman's.
Leave your bag there, darling.
That you, Mary?
Yes, dear.
Where have you been? You said 3:30.
It took longer than we expected. Here's Joe.
Hello there, Mrs. Freeman.
She looks pained.
It's nice to see you again.
Do you think he's changed much, Mother?
No, I don't think so.
After all, it is 3 years.
Well, we never got to know each other that well.
No, we didn't.
She takes a sip of tea from her teacup and casts a disdainful look before sinking into an armchair.
Cigarette, Joe?
Oh, thanks.
Well, I suppose you've come to take Mary back to America again.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why I've come.
He wants me to fly back with him in 2 or 3 days' time.
Oh. Well, I suppose you'll have to go then, won't you?
Well, is there any reason why she shouldn't?
Joe.
It's all right, Mary. I know your husband thinks that I've kept you here deliberately. But, of course, he doesn't realize how ill I've been.
Joe folds his arms and sighs.
I've told Joe about the baby, Mother.
Yeah, that's great news, isn't it? So what are we going to call him? How about George? That was your father's name, wasn't it?
No.
Mrs. Freeman rises quickly.
Okay, I'm sorry.
I don't wish to talk about it. Can't you see you're upsetting me?
Now, wait a minute.
It was always the same. No consideration for me, none at all.
She puts down her cap and saucer.
Think about nothing but yourselves the whole time. Leave me here all alone. Leave me to die.
She clutches a lace hanky to her face and hurries into another room, shutting the door.
Still the same sweet old mother.
Joe paces in front of the wood-carved mantelpiece.
Every time I tried to come home, she had another attack.
He puffs on his cigarette. Mary watches him.
Joe, come and sit down here.
They sit on the floor in front of the hearth. Joe tosses his cigarette into the fire and wraps Mary in his arms.
Can I get the tickets?
She hesitates.
Yes.
Joe throws a look in the direction of the other room.
You sure you won't change your mind? You sure you want to let her change it for you?
I want to go home, Joe. I'll tell her tonight.
We're on our way, honey.
The image blurs. Mike's in a locker room.
Four men with four guns. Here is Mike Morgan, British, age 31, professional boxer, served honorably with the Navy, no criminal record.
How's he making out, Doc?
Pretty poorly. Acute concussion. I'm sending him to hospital.
But Doc, he fights next week in Blackpool. It ain't gonna look so good.
Well, I shall have to send in a report to the Border Control. I don't think he should fight again.
But Doc, now don't be hasty. It's happened before. We felt fine the next day.
I'm sure you have, but it's happened once too often.
The doctor leaves.
The way these guys take away a guy's living.
Give over, Brooksy.
Mike.
The chocolate boy's been with you for 15 years. I boxed him 7 years ago and he was finished then. Why don't you help him for a change?
For instance.
Stookie listens.
Help him get out of the game. That's all these pugs think about is getting out of the game. They don't love it no more, Brooksy, and that's a fact. They don't love it no more.
Yeah. You and me love the game. That's why we're in it. Good luck, Stookie. And you, Mike.
Brooksy goes. Stookie looks at Mike.
We've had our share of luck already, Mike, just getting you this fight. The way I had to talk.
Yeah. You're good at that.
The minute I heard that Kid Gavin was backing out, I put you up as a substitute straight away. They didn't want you, Mike, but
you talked them into it. You've told me before. How long is it since you topped the bill, Mike?
Mike hesitates.
Just after the war? Tim Mahoney.
Yeah. It's a pity you hit him with your chin. Watch this, Milton. He punches like a tiger.
A young man.
Oh, my favorite fighter. How do you feel, son?
A bit nervous.
Nothing to it. You've got what it takes, son. I can smell a champion a mile off. Listen, this is how we'll do it tonight.
Stookie leads the young man away. Mike smiles, then goes over to Bunny.
Bunny, who's the green boy?
That's Stookie's new prospect, Ron Simpson. Last year's amateur welter champion. He's a good boy.
Yeah, we were all good boys once.
Mike sits down with a sigh. Bunny watches him with interest.
I'll let you into a secret, Bunny. This is the last one.
Good old Mike. Stookie now?
No. If he knew, he wouldn't let me have this fight.
Are you all for the ready?
I got £900 in the post office.
Tonight's 100 gives me the 1,000. I promised Andrew I'd quit when I got that behind me. It's taken me 12 years to do it, buddy.
Yeah, and there's Stucky G and that kid on over there about fame and fortune.
We get the fame and he gets the fortune. In my case, I got neither.
Somebody's been put away. I'll lay you 5 to 4, it's Ashby. Come on, give us your hand. What's up, Mike? What's wrong with your fork?
I don't know. I heard it in training 2 days ago.
Well, let's have a look at it. Whew, blimey. You've had it, chum.
Get the bandage on, Bunny. Not a word to Stu.
Look here, you can't fight a guy like Milton with one hand.
Mike pulls his hand away.
Got it, Bunny. I need that 100 quid. I want to get out of the game. I don't want to end up like a chocolate kid tonight.
Mike thrusts his hand out.
Bind it good and hard. Something's got to hold it together.
Outside in the corridor, Angie waits. She has brown curly hair under a neat hat and large brown eyes which brighten as Mike comes out of the locker room, his dressing gown draped over his bare shoulders.
Sorry, I'm late. They were fixing my bandages.
How do you feel, Mike?
Fine.
This is the last time.
Yep. Win or lose.
In a way, I want you to lose because I know that's final. A win and you'll promise yourself one more fight.
Angie, will you do me a favor? Don't watch tonight.
I never do watch. I just shut my eyes and pray you won't get hurt too much.
They both turn towards the direction of the cheering.
No, don't come in. Go straight to Rudy's. I'll meet you there after the fight.
She starts to go, but Mike pulls her back.
What are you going to do with your husband in a regular job, Angie?
I suppose we'd just be like everybody else. Perhaps we can get a little house.
And kids. Imagine us with kids.
Promise.
Promise. I never made the grade like I said I would. But I tried. See Rudy's.
Promise.
Mike smiles and Angie hurries down the corridor. Stucky appears in the doorway.
Ready, son?
Yeah. I've got a split in that egg. Come on, let's go and make some money.
The spectators are tightly packed on all four sides of the boxing ring. Bunny slips a gum shield into Mike's mouth. Milton eyes Mike.
Second down!
The two boxers move swiftly into the centre of the ring and jab at each other, circling, jumping from foot to foot. Milton lands a right hook which floors Mike. The white-shirted referee stands over him and counts. Mike flexes his injured hand inside his glove and gets to his feet. The two men continue fighting. In a front row seat, the young Miles Rave Ravenscourt sits, smoking slowly on a small cigar. He watches the fight intently, his dark eyes sparkling with pleasure at the spectacle. The blows come thick and fast. Mike is floored again. Stucky tilts his hat over his eyes and turns away, unable to watch. Mike gets up. Rave leans over to his glamorous blonde companion and whispers something. She laughs. Mike's on the defensive, constantly being driven up against the ropes, holding his forearms in front of his face to protect himself from Milton's powerful punches. Mike reels back as a punch hits home, then drops to his knees, his body swaying. Milton keeps dancing on the spot, panting for more. Mike staggers to his feet as the round finishes. Bunny hurries over to him and helps him to the corner. Mike collapses onto a seat as Stucky leans over the ropes.
I thought I told you to keep away from him.
I tried.
What are you trying to do to me? Ruin my reputation? Your only chance now is to go in there and mix it, slug it out with him.
Sure, mix it, slug it out. It's not his nose and jawn belly that's being it, is it? Just beginning to dawn on me, Mr. Stucky. Don't know what he's talking about. How's the hand, kid?
Hasn't fallen off yet.
Here, let me throw in the towel, Mike. It's your last fight, anyhow.
I'm not going out that way, buddy.
Fingers up!
Milton is up and raring to go. Mike sits, slumped. Then jumps to his feet. His face locked in grim determination, he moves in to meet his opponent. Neither man has the upper hand as they dodge each other's punches. Then Milton sends Mike sprawling. Rave's female companion laughs with delight. Mike lies on the deck panting. He looks up at Milton, then slowly rises. The fight continues. Rave inhales deeply on his cigar. The boxers become locked in a clinch. Milton looks over Mike's shoulder at Rave's companion, who winks at him flirtatiously. He loses concentration, and Mike lands a punch which knocks Milton to his knees, where he shakes his head trying to recover. Milton gets up and Mike lays into him, knocking Milton back against the ropes. Milton's knocked to the floor. Stookie's chatting to a man about Mike.
Good boy in his day.
Good? Him?
He turns and looks.
What did I tell you? That boy will be a champion one day. The next fight will cost you double. Oh, I love him like my own son.
The referee lifts Mike's gloved hand, declaring him the winner. Bunny rushes over to him, puts a towel around his neck.
Oh, I would never seen such a punch. In all my years in the ring, I've never seen a comeback like that.
In all your years in the ring, you've never been in the ring. Sinella mugs and they get their brains knocked out.
We're on our way to the top now. Nothing can stop us.
This is as far as we're going. Now get the money, Stookie, and take your cut. It's the last you'll get.
All right, boy. You'll feel better after a shower.
Mike, in a jacket and tie and carrying his kit bag, walks into Rudy's. He nurses his injured hand and smiles as he sees Angie sitting at a small round table waiting for him. She gets up, noticing the plaster over his right eye and the smile on his face. She sits back down, disappointed.
Guess you thought I lost?
Yes.
I won. Knocked him out in a second.
She bows her head.
I know what you're thinking. But it's a good way to end with a knockout win.
She looks up.
A good way to end? You really meant it?
Yeah.
A man strolls in.
What sort of job will you get, Mike?
I don't know. Heavy metals, maybe.
Great fight, Mike. A few more wins like that and you'll be challenging the top boys again.
How did you know we were here?
Why, Angie, you don't seem pleased to see your brother.
What do you want, Dave? We only see you when you want something.
Now, that's not nice. Still, this time you're right.
If it's a question of money...
Is it between me and Mike, Angie? A straight loan between brothers-in-law, eh, Mike?
The young man pulls up a chair.
I owe a guy £100. A gambling debt.
What's that got to do with Mike?
Everything. I was at the fight tonight and I gave a guy 10-1 that Mike would lose.
Thanks.
What do you want to win for? After that first round, it was a cast iron certainty my money was safe.
It was a lucky punch, that's all.
Yeah, maybe, but it sunk me. I'll pay you back, Mike. Honest, I will.
Don't give it to him, Mike.
But, Angie, I can't welch in a bet. They'll put the strong-arm boys on me.
You can go back to prison for all I care. If you think Mike's giving you that money, you're wrong.
Okay. But if you won't let me have the money, I'll rob a house or something.
You'd better do that.
She turns her face away from David, who gets up and looks back at the seated couple with resentment.
So this is how you promised Mum you'd look after me?
Angie flinches. David thrusts his hands into the pockets of his raincoat and marches out.
I'd have given him the money if you'd wanted it.
I know you would, Mike. But what's the point? Next week it'll only be something else.
Here.
A bundle of money.
Put it in the post office in the morning.
You kept your word, Mike. And I love you for it. Oh, your hand. You've hurt it.
No, it's nothing. It's only a bruise.
But didn't Stookie make you show it to the doctor?
No. I was in a hurry to get away.
Well, let's get home. I'll bandage it for you.
That image blurs. Eddie's looking at framed photographs.
The third man with a gun is Sergeant Eddie Blaine. This is his wife, Denise, a film actress, occasionally. Eddie Blaine is with the American Air Forces in England, age 36, war hero, no criminal record.
Eddie goes over to the window of their flat to see his wife Denise getting out of a white convertible with a young man who's besieged by fans. Denise nudges him as he signs.
You all know Miss Lynn? Miss Denise Lynn. Why don't you sign one, darling?
Oh, no, really,
She refuses with mock reluctance, then grabs an autograph book. She hands it back, then waits for someone else to ask for her autograph, but no one does.
I think that's all for tonight, children. Good night, darling. Good night, Art.
Good night, sweetheart.
Eddie takes a hot casserole dish from the oven and, still holding it with a cloth, goes to let Denise in.
Hello, Eddie.
Hello.
She pouts at the dish.
Doesn't look very good, does it?
Eddie slams the door.
It looked a lot better an hour ago.
It probably did. Sorry, dear.
If you hadn't called me from the studio and said you'd be right home, I would have held it up.
Don't be tiresome, Eddie. When I called you, I thought I was leaving right then. So what?
She goes into the bedroom. Eddie follows, still holding the dish.
So what? So I hope you liked your meat well done. Do you think I enjoy cooking this stuff?
Eddie, dear, I didn't ask you to stand slaving over a hot stove. So let's not be stupid about it.
Just in case you've forgotten, I'm only on a 48-hour pass. Last night you were kept at the studio till midnight.
Can I help it if the director takes it into his head to shoot 4 extra scenes?
Okay, okay. So tonight the idea was to have a nice quiet dinner in our own home. Just for once in a couple of years.
Well, it didn't work out. That's all.
Because you were kept late at the studio again?
Why else?
I thought maybe because Todd Maslin's car broke down. That was his car brought you home, wasn't it?
It was.
Yeah, I thought I recognized him. What a jerk. He's had his hair curled since I saw him last.
Oh, there's no need to be selfish, Eddie. Todd Maslin has become the biggest thing in pictures. And he's asked little me to be with him in his next film.
How exciting. I saw your last picture, by the way. Who was the guy you said you're lying to?
I'm afraid, Eddie, your life in the Air Force has coarsened your mind.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised. Not that you know anything about my life in the Air Force. Well, look, Denise, why don't you forget about
it? Please, Eddie.
Yes, I know. We've been through all that. You've got your career to think about, and a girl can't be a camp follower and a bit player all at the same time.
You know, Eddie, your conversation becomes more stupid every time I see you.
Well, that's something you won't have to worry about for quite some time.
He starts to go.
Unless my little wife is going to follow her devoted husband to Germany.
She looks mildly surprised.
You mean you're being transferred? When?
Next month.
Well, why didn't you say anything yesterday, when you arrived?
Well, you'll laugh when I tell you. I had the crazy idea my wife would be happy to see me, and I didn't want to spoil the fun. Can you beat that?
He looks at her searchingly.
You know, it's funny, Denise. You don't give a damn about me, and I know it. And I go on being crazy about you.
She kisses him on the lips, teasingly.
Do you, darling? That's all right, then. Isn't it?
She walks out of the bedroom. He follows.
Look, Denise, why don't we go out to some swank restaurant tonight where there's music and we can dance and have some fun? What do you say?
No, you go and have fun. I'm going to bed. I've had a pretty long day.
Well, you have to eat, don't you?
Had a sandwich on the way back.
You had a sandwich? Well, that's fine. That makes my day. Maybe you'd like me to go back to camp tonight so as not to disturb your beauty sleep.
No. But if you come in late, try not to wake me. I'm on first call tomorrow. I have to be out of here by 7.
She's sitting on his jacket. Eddie yanks it away angrily.
Good night, darling, and have a good time.
As Eddie walks out of the door, the image blurs.
And lastly, Miles Ravenscourt, age 30, only son of Sir Francis Ravenscourt. Occupation, gentleman. Decorated at El Alamein. Likewise, no criminal record.
He walks into his wife's studio where she sits sketching a picture of him. Eve's a slim, attractive blonde.
I'm so sorry, darling. I've had so much to do today.
Mm?
I said, I'm sorry, I'm late.
What time is it?
It's 10:30.
She arches her elegant brows.
Oh, gosh, dinner. I am sorry.
It doesn't matter. It's too late to go out now.
The room's full of portraits of Rave.
There's something the matter with your eyes.
Rave looks at a portrait.
See yourself as others see you.
He pours a drink.
And 1,000 guineas a time. And you, with all the money in the world. It's absurd.
It's unjust, isn't it?
It isn't. I think I'm very lucky. I think we're both very lucky. Drink?
No, thank you.
You know, there are not many people who've been married as long as we have and are still perfectly happy.
Eve looks at him.
Will you go on being happy, do you think?
But certainly.
Provided, of course, that I continue to keep you in the manner to which you've become accustomed.
You took the words right out of my mouth, my darling.
She puts down her sketching board.
Well?
Rave looks his wife up and down as she sits in the chair.
You're looking very attractive tonight, you know. But then you always do.
What is it this time?
He sits wistfully at her feet.
You read me like a book, don't you?
Don't overdo the boyish candor, Rave. It's a trick of yours, I know.
It's a trick of mine you like.
What do you want?
I gave old Harry a check for 1,000 tonight. I'm afraid there's nothing in the bank to meet it.
Well, then why did you give it to him?
Because I lost it playing poker. Anyway, as long as we put the money first thing in the morning...
I'm sorry, Rave. You're getting no more money from me.
She gets up and stacks her sketching board with some others.
In that case... I'm going to be in rather an embarrassing position, you know.
Rave, why must you always show off? You know you can't afford to gamble like this.
I know I shouldn't.
He shrugs nonchalantly.
Let me run you a nice hot bath. It'll put you in a friendlier mood.
I had a bath before the dinner we didn't go to.
Eve follows him to the bedroom. She removes her earrings and starts to take off the string of pearls around her neck. Rave smokes as he watches her.
Listen, Rave, tonight it was poker. Yesterday, the eternal new car.
Every other day, bookmaker's bills, drinks all round, good old rave, always ready for the touch. Well, it's over, darling. I'm not paying any more.
Mrs. Ravenscourt, we have this dialogue regularly once a month. Let me off tonight.
What would you do if I told you I was broke?
You're not, are you?
No.
A smile plays on her lips.
But I'm as far as you're concerned.
Why?
Because I want to feel I married a man, not a sponger.
Unseen by Eve, Rave flinches.
What would you have done if you hadn't married me?
Been a burglar.
You know, I've been thinking a lot about you lately. In all these years, I don't think I've ever known you do a single day's work. What are you like in the army?
I was a good soldier. I killed well.
He undresses in the bathroom.
If Harry's check isn't met, London isn't going to be very comfortable for us.
I had a letter from my father this morning.
Oh? How's he liking it out there?
He loves it. Rave, what did you think about living in Kenya? Father's promised to give you a job.
That's very handsome of him. I wouldn't think of it. London's our town. I like everything about it.
Including your debts.
Which brings us back to Harry's check. We can't let him down, can we?
I can.
Well, what do you want me to do? Call him up and tell him the check's no good?
Yes, darling. That's just what I want you to do.
She kisses him and pats his neck. He sits on the bed and Rave lounges beside her.
You're a very beautiful woman, Eve. And beautiful women shouldn't try and be clever. Our life's all right. Let's just live it. We're both a little on edge and need a change. Why don't we take the car and go somewhere in the sun?
I'm going to Kenya. There's plenty of sun there.
She leans forward to kiss him.
And I'm staying in London. When you wake up in the morning, you'll want to stay too.
They kiss passionately, and he pushes her back down onto the bed. As they lie locked in the kiss, Rave lifts his eyes and sees Eve's checkbook on the bedside table. He looks down at his wife's face under his.
Now, where are you going, Eve?
I'm going...
He stops her mouth with another kiss. Mike's bandaged hand hangs over the side of his bed. He lies beside his sleeping wife, Angie, in the dingy bedsit. He drags on a cigarette agitatedly and sits up. On his square head, his boxer's cauliflower ear is visible in the moonlight. Angie opens her eyes.
What is it, Mike?
I couldn't sleep.
Worried?
Yeah.
He gets up and goes to the window.
I wonder how I'll settle down to a routine job, Angie.
You'll get used to it.
She joins him.
I'll help you, Mike.
He holds his injured hand against his chest.
You know, Angie, I've never lived without the roar of the crowd. It was great when you won.
Even when you knew that the next time they'd be hollering for your blood?
Yeah.
But you're done with that now.
Oh, Mike.
She touches his hand.
Oh, I'm sorry, your hand.
Yeah, it's throbbing like the devil.
Well, that settles it, Mike Morgan. First thing in the morning to the hospital for an X-ray.
Not tomorrow morning. I've got to go after that job.
Oh, the next day I'll do for that.
The next day won't do for that. The newspaper said the Kennington Metal Works were looking for skilled men. If I don't go in the morning, the job may be gone. Besides?
And besides what, Mike?
Look, Angie. After tonight, there'll be plenty of fights offered me. If I don't get a job quickly, they'll talk me back into the ring. It's as simple as that.
At the Ravenscourt's, Rave greets the maid with a charming smile.
Oh, thank you, Leela. I'll take it.
Thank you, sir.
And takes the silver breakfast tray from her, placing a folded check on it.
A tea, darling.
He puts the tray down on a table and pulls a chair out for his wife to sit. She steps down from the upper studio level.
Thank you.
He kisses the top of her head as Eve picks up the check.
Now, what is this?
The check. I made it out for you. Must get that money in first thing. You know, Harry's the sort of chap who'll be sitting on the bank steps waiting for it to open.
Now, if I do this for you once more, will you promise me not again? Ever?
Promise?
Promise. If I lie, I hope to die.
He picks up the newspaper as Eve opens her mail. Rafe can't help casting concerned looks over at his wife as she reads a letter. Eve starts slightly and looks at her husband. She puts the letter down and, with her face registering nothing, tears up the cheque. She starts to pour the tea.
Oh, really, darling? I don't mind having a row with you at night. There's plenty of time to make it up then. But I must have that cheque this morning.
He stands up, throws down the newspaper and picks up the letter. He reads it, then looks up with narrowed eyes.
You really are rather common, Eve. You've had me watched.
The regimental dinner last week. My manicure is sort of thought of that. Last Tuesday, your old sergeant in hospital, only decent if you took him some fruit. I hope the girl from the post office enjoyed the grapes.
Does a silly little stamp-licking brunette or a blonde polisher of nails matter to us? My life is here with you.
I believe you mean that sometimes.
Then Coverhead had his check. There's a good girl.
She turns to him, shaking her head.
No, I've made up my mind. You won't get another penny from me.
Then I shall just have to tell Harry the checks are going to bounce.
Yes, go and tell him at once, this morning.
There's nothing else I can do.
No, Rafe, there isn't. Not now.
Rafe looks down at the letter in his hands.
I'm truly sorry about this. I promise it will never happen again.
He goes.
Perhaps it won't. In Kenya.
At the airport, an aircraft taxis into position. In the departure lounge, Joe brings his wife Mary a magazine. She holds a bouquet.
Here you are, darling.
Thank you. It was nice of Mother to send the flowers.
Yeah, maybe she's human after all. She keeps on like this, maybe she can come and live with us.
Passengers on Pan American Flight 150 to New York, please proceed to the aircraft.
Mr. Halsey, you or your wife are urgently wanted on the telephone. Quickly, you've just got time.
Joe and Mary exchange concerned looks and follow the air hostess. Mary takes the call.
Yes. Yes, all right, I'll come at once.
She leaves the phone booth as if in a trance. Joe goes to her.
What is it?
It's Mother. She's tried to kill herself.
Joe puts a sympathetic hand on her shoulder.
How?
An overdose of sleeping tablets.
Who is that telephoned?
A friend of hers. She went in and found her.
But she's all right, isn't she? Look, darling, we gotta catch this plane.
She did this once before when I was 14.
Mary, this is our last chance.
We can't keep the plane waiting any longer, Mr. Halsey.
Well, honey, we gotta go.
I'm sorry, Joe.
Mike jumps off a number 170 double-decker bus to Hackney. A cigarette hangs from his mouth and he nurses his bandaged hand. He sets off over a cobbled street towards a factory. He pauses at the metal gate to allow a woman to pass through, resting his bandaged hand on the gate frame. The gate swings shut onto his hand. Mike slumps back against the wall, everything swimming before his eyes. Then he collapses unconscious on the cobbles. Angie waits anxiously at the hospital. She watches her husband being wheeled past on a trolley. A doctor comes up to her.
You're Mrs. Morgan.
Yes. How is he?
Your husband didn't tell you, I suppose. He fought last night with a broken hand.
No. He didn't say anything.
Mrs. Morgan, you must understand, he'll never fight again.
He doesn't want to. He's finished with all that.
I don't mean that. I mean he'll never be able to fight again.
What?
He managed to save his life, but not his hand. We had to amputate.
Angie's face crumples and her lips start to tremble.
No.
She turns away.
There was no alternative. Gangrene had set in. Now come, Mrs. Morgan. He'll need your help.
At Mrs. Freeman's house, Joe finishes a telephone call.
Yeah, thanks.
He turns to the grey-haired doctor.
So she won after all.
I beg your pardon? She tell me, doctor.
How many of those tablets did she take?
The box was empty.
Yeah, I know, but how many did she take? Enough to kill her?
Oh, no, not enough to kill her.
Just enough to make her sort of nice and drowsy, huh? About three, shall we say?
About that, yes.
Mm-hmm. She also managed to have a neighbor call up Mary at the airport.
Mr. Halter, have you discussed this with your wife?
No, I haven't.
No, I don't think I should. She's had a considerable shock as it is.
Yeah, tell me, Doctor.
No, I really can't say any more, Mr. Halsey, except that if I were you, the next time I made any plans, I'd stick to them.
The doctor goes. Joe goes into the living room where Mrs. Freeman reclines on the sofa, huddled in a shawl. Mary looks out of the window at the pouring rain.
I'll refund the money.
I'm sorry if I've inconvenienced you, Joe.
You haven't. We can go just as easy in a couple of days.
Oh, I know what you think of me. But you're young. You don't understand.
I understand, all right. So does Mary.
Oh. Well, in that case, there's nothing more to be said, is there? Of course, if Mary feels it's safe to leave me.
What kind of a mother are you, anyway? Don't you care what happens to Mary?
Do you care what happens to me? Leaving me here, all alone?
That's not true. We wanted you to come with us. Joe offered to...
That's right. Side with him. Take his part against me. And after all I've done for you...
For Pete's sake.
All I've planned. Now you go and leave me. Go to the other side of the world.
I've had enough of this. You've always hated my guts, I know that.
Oh, please, Joe.
It's true. But get this, Mrs. Freeman. 5 years ago, your daughter married a G.I. She's still married to him, and she's going to stay married to him, having children by him and living in New York City in the United States of America, 3,000 miles away from you.
She avoids Joe's glare.
Maybe she's darn lucky at that.
He heads for the door.
Joe! Where are you going?
I got $12.50 in my pocket. I hope I'm going to get drunk on it. So for the rest of the night, Mother dear, you're free to laugh your head off.
Mrs. Freeman jumps to her feet.
Mary, I feel faint.
Mary takes a brief look at her mother, then rushes after Joe. She catches up with him in the street.
Joe!
They shelter from the rain in a shop doorway. Joe takes off his raincoat.
You're all wet.
And puts it round her shoulders.
Thanks.
Joe turns up his jacket collar and stares out at the rain.
Well, what are you going to do now?
We'll register at a hotel.
And then you'll go back to America.
I don't know what I'm going to do.
Joe, this isn't something that can just be worked out in a few hours.
It won't ever be worked out.
Joe, stay with me. Don't leave me.
What are we going to live on?
There's the money from the air tickets.
I don't get a job. The air ticket money's not going to last very long.
Joe, just stay for a few more months.
Oh, Mary, this mother business is going to go on forever.
She stares at Joe, then steps out of the doorway.
Where are you going?
He pulls her back so she's facing him, holding onto the lapels of the raincoat.
Well, I guess I'm an idiot, but I'd rather share you with your mother than not have you at all.
He pulls her to him, and they kiss. Mike emerges from a cobbled alleyway, a cloth cap on his head, his collar turned up as the heavy rain bounces off the glistening pavement. He peers into the gloom, then runs across the road. The bottom of his left sleeve hangs empty. Mike opens the ornate frosted glass door of a London pub, the Four in Hand, and goes up to the bar.
Hello, Mike.
Hello, Mom.
Found anything yet?
No.
What's it to be, dear?
Bitter.
Mike shoves a cigarette into his mouth and sees Joe sitting at the bar.
The light, John?
Hmm? Oh, sure.
Joe slides the matches to him. Mike struggles with his one hand.
Sorry.
Joe lights Mike's cigarette for him. The barmaid brings Mike's pint.
1/6, please, dear.
Yeah, have one on me, huh?
Joe passes the money over.
Cheers.
Rave sits down with his father, a large man with a balding pate and multiple double chins. Then in a gentleman's club. Rave smokes. Sir Francis picks up a newspaper and hands one to his son.
Well, thank you.
Well, what is it this time, my son?
The same old story, I suppose?
Not quite. I want some real money this time.
What do you mean by that?
Not yours, my own.
You haven't any money of your own.
I will have, eventually.
Oh, no, my boy. You don't touch a penny of that until I'm dead.
It's absurd. You don't need it. You've plenty of your own.
Plenty. I intend to use your mother's money as she'd have wanted me to. It doesn't include giving any of it to you now.
You know, I wouldn't be quite so smug and disinterested if I were you. Someone who is quite determined to be most unpleasant about it has a check of mine for $1,000, which is probably bouncing at this very moment. So if you're determined not to share the money, in a few days from now, you'll be sharing some very lurid headlines.
You can't threaten me anymore. Public disgrace couldn't be worse than sitting here being reminded that I'm your father.
You really do hate me, don't you?
I don't hate you. I loathe and despise the very sight of you.
Why do you exaggerate my faults? I suppose it's only vanity and pride that prevent you from exposing me.
Common sense? I know you exactly for what you are. A liar, a cheat, and a scoundrel, but I can't prove it. Any more than I can prove that those six Germans you killed in the desert had lost their way, were out of ammunition and unconscious when you came upon them.
How very clever of you. Actually, one of them was quite conscious.
Rafe drops a supercilious smile and glowers with hatred.
That's my money you're hanging on to. Blast you, and I want it.
Once and for all, you won't get one penny of my money ever, or your mother's, until I'm dead. I may tell you I have one ambition left in life. To outlive you.
He gets to his feet.
I see.
Rafe stands.
Oh, well, I thought it would be a waste of time talking to you anyway.
It was. You could better employ your talents planning to rob a bank. You'd have more chance of success. That's the way out, my son.
He offers his hand. Rafe takes it with a smirk and goes. Sir Francis stares after him, his eyes wide, then sits down weakly in the leather armchair. At the Four in Hand pub, the bar's busy, a pianist at the piano. Joe and Mike are deep in conversation. At the far end of the bar stands Eddie in his Air Force uniform. He sips miserably from his half pint. He notices two women at a table and smiles at one of them. She smiles back. Her friend notices. Joe spots Eddie and gets off his bar stool.
Eddie! I don't believe it. Eddie Blaine.
Joe. Joe Halsey. How have you been?
Fine. You look great. Still in uniform. And you finally made it. Hey, Mike, I want you to meet an old friend of mine, Eddie Blaine. This is Mike Morgan. We met here a couple of days ago and it's sort of getting to be a habit.
Hello, Eddie. Glad to know you, Mike. Well, what are you doing here, Joe?
Oh, I came over to pick up my wife. How about you? You got a wife now?
Yeah, I've got a wife. Hey, let me buy you fellas a couple of drinks. I'm on the loose tonight. I'm celebrating.
Sorry, Eddie. I've got a wife waiting at home. That goes for me, too. Gee, I'm late already.
Well, maybe next time I'm on leave, we can all have a drink.
Sure, we're always in here. Sure, fine.
Nice to have seen you again, Joe.
Good to see you.
Mike, glad to have met you.
Yeah, bye-bye, Eddie.
The two men go, leaving Eddie standing alone. He turns round and sees the two women. He pulls up a chair at the table.
Buy you a drink?
Well,
thanks. I'll have a gin.
Bye-bye, Winnie, dear. I'll see you in the morning.
She takes the hint.
All right. Goodbye.
She goes.
What'll you have?
I'm all right, thanks.
Here's to Winnie.
What are you celebrating? Oh, I just heard you tell your friends you were celebrating.
Oh, that. Celebrating. I forget it.
Are you on leave?
Mm-hmm. Till 8 o'clock in the morning. That gives us about 10 hours.
Us? Are you married?
Probably. Why?
Oh, I just like to know what the weather's like before I put to sea.
What's it like? Fair and warm?
Could be.
You make good coffee?
Yes.
Well, you can't make it here. Get your hat.
All right. But I'd like to telephone first.
Husband?
Probably.
She gets up with a smile and goes to the phone, passing Rafe sitting at a table with a brunette. His companion gone, Eddie looks miserable again. He looks over at the woman who's holding the telephone receiver. He stands up frowning, his heavy dark eyebrows knitted together. Then he turns and leaves. He enters his flat and switches on the light, putting the front door keys in his pocket. The fashionably decorated living room is deserted. He takes off his cap and slings it on the sofa, then goes into the bedroom, switching on the light. The twin beds are both empty. Eddie stares at the beds, his jaw clenched as he unbuttons his jacket. He goes to the window and pulls back the net curtain to look out. Seeing nothing, he turns back into the room, his hands in his pockets. He walks slowly back into the living room. Later, he lies curled up asleep on the sofa. Denise comes in wearing a black silk cocktail dress. She's with the film actor, Todd Maslin.
Oh, look at this. Every light in the place on.
Why should he worry? He doesn't have to pay the bills.
Well, who cares? Come on. It'll only take me 10 minutes to change, then we can...
Eddie sits up.
Well, hello, Eddie, dear. What are you doing here? Did you forget to go to bed?
Eddie stands up and eyeballs Todd.
Of course you two don't know each other, do you? This is my husband. Eddie, dear, this is Todd Maslin. You remember, he brought me home the other evening.
I remember, and now he brought you home again. What's the matter, Mr. Maslin? Don't you have a home of your own to go to?
Eddie, dear. Oh, you mustn't mind my husband, Todd. He has a rather peculiar sense of humor.
I'm afraid, Mr. Maslin, I have no sense of humor at all.
Eddie, dear, Todd just came in to wait for me while I change. Then he's driving me out to the studio.
I'm in the picture with her.
How interesting. What are they going to call it?
Two tramps in harmony.
I must remind myself not to see it.
I don't think that's at all funny.
It wasn't meant to be funny.
Well, I'm going to change.
Oh, Denise, before you go, would you mind telling me where the hell you've been all night?
I don't think I would. In your present mood, it would just be a waste of time.
Well, I just want to know, that's all. I just want to know.
Eddie, dear, I'll be obliged if you won't shout at me. I have a headache.
Can I get you some aspirin, darling?
Oh, would you, darling? Oh, that's sweet of you.
It's a pleasure.
Todd goes into the bedroom. Denise chuckles at Eddie and moves away. Todd takes the aspirin from the drawer of the bedside table and returns to the living room. Eddie waits for him in the doorway.
You know your way around here pretty well, don't you?
What? Oh, well...
But in case you don't know at all, this is the way out.
Wait for me in the car, darling.
Are you sure?
Get out!
Eddie holds the front door open. Todd goes. Eddie confronts his wife.
What did you mean by that crack?
Exactly what I said. He seems to know his way around here pretty well. And I can imagine what room he knows best.
Behind your vulgar tongue, Eddie, dear. You have a nasty mind, haven't you? I have to change, and I'd be glad of a little privacy.
I'm going to take a bath. That'll give you a chance to get out of here the easy way. I'll send you my address from Germany so you can write and tell me how much you miss me.
You know, Eddie, if you go on talking this way, I should begin to think you don't love me.
He glares and goes to the bathroom.
And Eddie, dear, don't slam the door. I have a headache, remember?
At a busy Waterloo station, a group of servicemen are gathering, smoking while they wait for the train. Eddie arrives, carrying his bag. He looks around the huge concourse, then goes into a phone booth.
Attention U.S. Air Force. Attention U.S. Air Force. Will personnel leaving for Germany please board the special train standing at platform 12. Immediately.
On the phone...
Have you any idea where she could possibly be?
I'm sure I don't know. I think she's gone on holiday.
On holiday? Well, if you needed her at the studio for publicity or anything, would you know where to reach her?
Well, she left a phone number. Of course, I can't give it to you.
Yes, well, I'm her husband.
Yes, sir, that's what they all say.
Could you tell me whether or not Todd Maslin is on call for the next 5 days?
No, he can't be. They do everything together. Well, it isn't the film, of course.
Eddie puts the phone down and comes out of the booth. He sees the serviceman running for the train. Instead of joining them, he picks up his bag and heads out of the station down the wide flight of grey stone steps.
Hello. Post office?
Raves on the phone in the pub.
Oh, could I speak to the assistant in the supervisor's office, please? Hello there. What are you doing for lunch? Good, then you'll have it with me. I'm just across the road.
Fine, I'll see you outside in a few minutes. Goodbye.
He goes over to the bar where Mike's holding a pint.
The usual, Molly.
He notices Mike and looks at him hard.
You're Mike Morgan, aren't you?
Yeah. What of it?
Oh, nothing. I thought I'd recognized you. I've watched you often in the ring. I saw your last fight.
Mike looks away and Rafe notices his empty sleeve.
Did he write that? I read about it in the papers.
Yeah.
By the way, my name's Ravenscourt.
Hello.
They shake.
What are you doing now?
Nothing. It seems there are plenty of jobs you can do with one hand. But they want two-handed men to do them.
I suppose you weren't in the game long enough to make your fortune.
No. I saved a bit. You can't do much in £1,000.
You could invest it.
In what?
You could buy a small business for £1,000.
What sort of business?
Well, a tobacconist. I know one that's going for just that amount.
Well, sounds like a good idea.
Think it over and let me know. I'd be delighted to help you.
I wouldn't want to bother you.
It's no bother at all. It's a pleasure.
Joe and Eddie come in.
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
How about you? This is Mr.
Ravenscourt.
Joe Halsey.
How do you do?
Oh, Eddie Blaine.
How do you do?
Hi.
What are you boys drinking?
Beer is fine, thanks.
Beer for me, too.
Three beers, Molly, and have one yourself.
Oh, thanks very much.
You having another?
No, not this time. I'm just off.
Oh, nice to have met you. I'll see you around sometime.
Yes, I'm here most mornings.
So are we. We're sort of charter members, the lame dog club.
What's that?
No, he's kidding. We're all in a spot of trouble. We meet here every morning to cheer ourselves up.
Well, there are worse ideas. Perhaps I can join.
Oh, go on, Mr. Rafe. What troubles have you got?
You'd be surprised, Molly. I'm late. Tomorrow at the same time.
Fine.
Sure.
Oh, and I'll try and see that man with the business today.
Thanks. He's a nice chap. What's he do, Molly?
Oh, he was in the army, got decorated and everything.
Yeah. What's he do now?
Nothing. He doesn't have to. He's got pots of money.
Rafe meets his brunette female friend who waits across the road. They head off arm in arm. Joe's at his mother-in-law's house. She takes a tablet with a glass of water as she talks.
A lot of fuss about nothing.
But you're not the only one who's got a right to be sick around here, you know.
Mary's case and mine are rather different.
You're not going to have a baby.
There's no need for you to be coarse. Besides, if you're so worried about Mary's health, why don't you stay in and look after her?
If you want to know, I went around the American Embassy to try to find some way of getting Mary and me back to the States without paying for it.
Oh, so you've spent all your money, have you?
She looks at him coldly.
Well, if you were half a man, you'd work your passage back. I could look after Mary.
You could look after her, all right. Spending half the time having her chase around waiting on you and the other half scaring the living daylights out of her.
How dare you?
I've heard you. What a bad time you had when she was born. How you almost died. How you swore you'd never go through it again.
Mary has a right to know the truth.
Joe squares up to Mrs. Freeman.
Mary's got a right not to be frightened sick by our selfish, morbid, wicked old...
He stops as the grey-haired doctor comes in.
Oh, perhaps I'd better leave you, doctor.
She goes. Joe goes over to the doctor.
Yes, you phrased it a trifle strongly, Mr. Halsey, but you're quite right, of course.
She's driving Mary out of her mind, Doc. She's not sleeping right, she's not eating right. What am I going to do?
The only solution is to get her away, right away, back to America as soon as possible.
I'm broke, Doc.
Yes, I would help you if I could.
Oh, no, thanks. What happens if I don't get her back?
If you don't, there may well be serious consequences.
For the baby, I mean.
Not only the baby. Now, try not to worry. It won't help her. She'll sleep tonight. I've left her a sedative to take.
The doctor picks up his coat.
I'll come again tomorrow.
Thanks, Doc.
Joe goes to the bedroom where Mary sits sewing in her dressing gown. He sits on the bed.
Hi.
Well.
How you feel, honey?
I'm fine. You mustn't get worried, Joe.
I'm not worried. You look great.
What did he say?
The duck? Oh, nothing much. He just said that the climate here wasn't too good for Junior, and he thinks we ought to get home as soon as we can.
But, Joe, how can we?
He looks away and stands up, thrusting his hands in his pockets.
I don't know. There's one thing I'm sure of. We're going. And soon.
Mike returns to a small bedsit. He goes to switch the light on.
No, don't put the light on.
Angie sits in a chair, her head resting on her hand.
What's up?
Oh, it's nothing. Just a headache, that's all. Did you find anything, dear?
No, same old story. I've got some other news for you, though. I met a fella in a pub. He gave me an idea. Says he can fix it up for me.
What idea?
A business of our own. A shop, Angie.
A shop?
Yeah, a tobacconist. This fella knows of one going. Says he can get it for £1,000.
£1,000?
Yeah. £0,500.
She drops a saucer.
Oh,
never mind that. It's great, isn't it, Angie? Just think of it. Our own shop with a flat above. No more worrying. No more lugging around for work I can't do.
She looks down.
I thought you'd be pleased, Angie.
Oh, Mike.
But it's a good idea, Angie.
It could have been. Last week.
Last week? Yeah, something's up. What is it?
She turns her distraught face to him.
Mike, you haven't got your £1,000 anymore.
He stares at her in disbelief.
What? Where is it?
It's Dave. He was arrested. I went bail for him for £1,000. He said he could prove he was innocent if only he was given a little time.
Well, we'll get it back after the trial.
No, he won't. He's gone. He's run away. He's out of the country. He'll never come back.
But what about my £1,000?
The police have got it. We can't get it back. I've asked about it.
Mike blinks as he struggles to understand.
They can't do that. It's my money. I earned it!
I'm sorry, Mike. I had to do it.
He drags her over to the mirror and switches on the lamp.
Look at me. Look at me! You see what I see? Now what did I do it for? Money. The money we were saving together. The money I was going to buy that shop with. Now what have I got for my trouble? Stone deaf in one ear, half blind in only one hand. What sort of a man does that make me?
Don't, Mike. Don't.
12 years of fighting. 12 years of being punched around the ring. What have I got to show for it? Nothing. Nothing!
He slumps onto the bed. Angie drops to her knees at his feet.
My dear, please. I'll put it right. I had to do it. He's my brother, but... give me a chance and I'll put it right.
What can you do?
I can work. I'll find a job. As long as we're together.
Her big eyes look at him imploringly.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Angie.
He sits up and looks into her face.
It'll be all right.
They hug each other with desperation. In the four in hand, Rafe gets in the drinks and brings them over to the other three. Eddie looks at Mike.
You know, Mike, you should have kept your money in the bank.
I thought it was safe where it was.
No money is safe where a woman can get her hands on it.
Where would you keep your money, Joe, if you had any?
Wouldn't keep it any place. I'd use it. There must be some place around here a guy can put his hands on some dough.
There's a post office just across the street.
It's very funny.
No, it isn't. Very. Yeah, I know what you mean, though. Lots of money on the other side of that counter, but it belongs to somebody else.
Yes, maddening, isn't it?
Do you know that in a few nights from now, there'll be something like £100,000 passing through into that building? Yeah? How come? Registered packets from the banks. Returning old treasury notes to the Bank of England for repulping. You mean they send it through the mail just like that?
Yes. No one has a serial number, so they're easy to pass.
I still say that's very funny.
Sorry, Joe.
Rafe drains his glass.
I was only joking. Here, let me get you another drink.
He gets up and goes to the bar.
Same again, please, Molly.
You know something? That guy talks too much.
Maybe he's just trying to cheer us up in a weird sort of way.
Rafe watches them.
He's right about one thing, though. They do get rid of the money that way.
Joe lights Mike's cigarette.
Yeah?
Yeah, I expect they bring it in a van or something.
That's it, Mike. Just an ordinary post office van.
There is one snag, of course. There are vans turning up at that building all the time, day and night. But which one has £100,000?
You mean you know all the rest and you don't know that?
Oh, I dare say I could find out for you.
Well, that's fine. Then we plan the job, grab the dough, and all wind up in jail.
Eddie heads for the door.
Hey! Eddie! Gone home?
Yeah, it's getting late.
Yeah, you're expecting your wife back today, aren't you?
That's right.
Well, now, look, now, don't do anything stupid. You're in enough trouble as it is. You know what you're going to get... Well, you know what you're going to get for desertion.
Joe, you've got your problems, I've got mine. Why don't you let me handle mine in my own way?
It's okay.
I'll see you, Joe.
So long, boy.
Denise enters her flat. Todd carries her case.
Leave it there, darling. We'll just have one quick drink and go and find some lunch.
Stuffy, isn't it?
Missing the sea air already?
There's no air of any sort in here.
The place has been all closed for 5 days now. Five beautiful, heavenly days.
She pours them both a drink and kisses Todd seductively.
Well, Todd, darling, welcome home.
Bless you, sweetheart.
Eddie watches them from the bedroom, leaning on the doorframe.
Bottoms up.
They choke on the drinks.
Eddie, what are you doing here?
Just waiting to welcome you home, sweetheart.
But you're supposed to be in Germany.
I changed my mind. Did you have a nice vacation?
You've got it wrong. Not vacation, Mr. Blaine. Location. We've been on location with the film, you know.
Yeah, I know.
Oh.
Todd, I think you'd better go down and wait in the car.
This is where we came in.
Whatever you may think, Denise,
Whatever I may think, Mr. Maslin can't be as dirty as the truth. Now get out of here before I do something about it.
Todd meets Eddie's glare.
Now, just a minute, Blaine. I think it's about time you and I understood one another.
We do. We do, Mr. Maslin. You take what you can get. And I try to keep what belongs to me. I'd say that was a pretty fair summary, wouldn't you, Denise?
Eddie opens the front door.
Darling, if there's anything...
Please go, Todd.
All right. I'll go.
Eddie drops Todd's case in the open doorway.
I'll see you tomorrow, darling. All right, I'm going. But I'm not satisfied.
As Todd bends to pick up his case, Eddie kicks his butt through the door.
You satisfied now, Mr. Maslin?
He slams the door on the sprawled-out Todd and marches back to Denise.
Any questions?
You didn't go to Germany. I suppose now you're a deserter.
That's right, I'm a deserter.
But Eddie, why didn't you go to Germany?
Because I had a little job to do here first. Something I should have done a long time ago.
What stupid thing do you have in mind now?
It isn't stupid. A little late, maybe, but it isn't stupid.
Eddie pulls off his jacket as Denise backs away into the bathroom.
What are you going to do, Eddie?
She brushes her lips against his face. He picks her up in his arms as she kisses his neck. Looking over her shoulder, he sees the bath full of water. He returns Denise's passionate kisses as he carries her over to the bath. He drops her in. As Denise beats her fist against the bath tiles in fury, Eddie puts his jacket back on, picks up his bag and leaves, pocketing a photograph of his wife as he goes. Rafe arrives home to find Eve in the bedroom packing.
Hello, dear.
Eve goes over to the chest of drawers and picks up some documents.
Harry phoned this morning.
Oh?
Yes. I've paid him and got your cheque back. There it is. And there's your ticket and passport. The plane leaves London Airport at 3 a.m. I've ordered the car for 1:30.
Eve continues packing. Rafe looks at the passport and ticket.
I may have to meet you at the airport. I've got something on tonight.
Got something on? What on earth do you mean?
That's entirely my business. And I think you're assuming a lot that I'm
please
coming...
Please don't let's have all that over again. You know, darling, it's only because of you that I'm determined to go. I don't relish the idea of having nothing but planters and their wives to paint. But if we both try, I'll settle down and so will you. We'll be happy together, I promise.
Shelling coffee beans is not my idea of heaven.
She throws down some ties with frustration.
You'd better be there, Rafe. You know...
She hugs him.
I really wouldn't want to live without you.
Being alone is something we all have to get used to sometime or another.
Does that mean you're not coming?
He looks at her with loathing and amusement.
Not necessarily. A change of climate may suit me. And perhaps I won't be able to live without you. After all.
He kisses her.
Here, let me help you pack.
It's early evening. In the four in hand, business is good as Eddie brings drinks over to a table where Mike and Joe sit, both lost in their thoughts.
Brought one for Rave. He should be here soon.
Across the road, outside the post office, Rave is kissing his brunette girlfriend. She turns and goes back into the post office. Rave turns up his coat collar and hurries across the road. He stops to study a post office van that's driving past. On seeing a policeman walking down the street, he hurries into the smoky pub and looks around for the others.
Say money can't buy happiness. I don't know. Maybe they're wrong. Maybe it can.
Ah, looks like the end of Denise.
Just I got a letter from her saying goodbye. You know, in the army they taught me not to think for myself. Well, they did a pretty good job. I can't think for myself anymore.
Maybe I can help.
A smile dances on Rave's lips.
You know, it occurs to me that you three have something in common.
Joe smiles bitterly.
Yeah, we're all in great shape. You're in trouble, all of you. Because you haven't got the guts to get out of it.
It's all right for you, Rafe. You've got money.
Yes, I have. And have you ever wondered why I've got it? Where it comes from?
That's your business.
It's yours, too. You know, when I came back from the war, I realized that while I'd been away, the others, the ones who stayed at home, had their chance and took it with both hands. There was money to be made. Lots of money. And they made it. Do you remember how they welcomed us back? They waved and cheered us in the streets. But that's about all they ever did for us.
Oh, no, not that old story again.
I don't know, Eddie. You take my boss back home.
What are you trying to do, Rave? Play Robin Hood?
Could be.
What do you want us to do? Steal the crown jewels? Rob a bank?
Rave looks round slowly at his three companions. They stare back at him in disbelief. Rave breaks the moment, knocking back his drink with a wry smile. He lowers his glass and looks in the direction of the bar till.
Hey, Ray, you got something on your mind. That's what I think it is. You're crazy. It needn't concern you if you don't want it.
He leans in close.
There's a young woman who works in that post office over there. Holds quite a responsible position. We've become rather good friends lately. She gave me this. She's become a little irresponsible, I'm afraid. £20,000. That's a sum of money involved. 12 sackfuls of registered packets taken out of the vans and into the post office. Only three men. Four of us. No violence, just a straight right to the jaw, perhaps nothing more. Transfer the sacks into my car and away. At 11 o'clock. Tonight.
Rave smiles jovially at the serious faces.
Let me get you boys another drink. Same again, please, Molly.
As Rave goes to the bar, the three men look at each other, their eyes flitting from face to face, locked in intense thought.
Thank you.
Rave returns slowly, carrying the drinks, no longer pints, but all spirits.
Well?
Well, what? There's some things I am and some things I'm not. One of the things I'm not is a thief.
Neither am I. But aren't you supposed to be in Germany at the moment?
That's not what I mean, Rave, and you know it.
All right, then. You're a good boy. Are you, Eddie? You behave yourself. You keep the law. And so does Joe and Mike. You're all three good boys.
What's wrong with that?
The law? What's the law ever done for me? Took my 1,000 quid.
That's what I mean. Look at Joe. You couldn't get a job because of the law. You, with a wife and kid coming.
You're speaking nonsense, Rave.
Prove it.
Eddie hesitates.
That's just it. I can't. There's some things I could say that would throw those words of yours into the garbage can where they belong. Right now, I can't think what they are. Maybe I don't want to.
Joe speaks.
Tell me, Ray, how come you want to steal the money?
Because I want to help you. You three are in trouble. Trouble you don't deserve to be in. I want to get you out of it in this way I can. That's if you want me to, of course. If you don't, oh, well, let's forget about it.
Rave casually takes a drink, his sharp eyes watching the others' reactions. Joe shifts uneasily, then gets up.
Well, I shall be going home.
Rave's eyes dart over to Eddie and Mike, who are watching Joe as he leaves.
What about you two? You must make up your minds. This is your last chance.
Joe has stopped. He slowly turns back to the table. Rave's eyes sparkle as he realizes he's hooked them. He looks at Eddie.
Do you want a divorce?
Then Mike.
Do you want to be a one-armed beggar?
And Joe.
Do you want your wife to die?
Joe stands rigid, his face grim. He slowly walks back to his seat at the table. Rave's face is lit up as he scans them all.
£20,000 each.
We'd never pull it off.
You're wrong.
We could. I'm going to. Now listen. This is my plan.
Later that night, the Jaguar pulls up.
Why did you have to steal a car? You said we'd use yours.
This one's faster. The case on the floor, Mike. Open it.
Obeying Rave's instruction, Mike picks up the leather case. In the back, Joe and Eddie lean forward as Mike clicks it open.
What's this?
Rave hands a gun to Joe.
What's the idea of the guns?
I thought you said no violence.
And Eddie, Mike picks one up.
I'm not going to use this, Rave.
If you'll do as you're told, you won't have to.
The Jaguar pulls away. The clock reads 11. A couple walk along the wet pavement, their arms around each other. The Jaguar drives slowly into the street, which is lit by two street lamps. Two more lamps are at either side of the stone archway, over the steps leading up to the post office entrance. As the couple cross the road, the Jaguar stops outside the Four in Hand pub. At the same time, a big square post office van pulls up on the other side of the road. For a moment, all is still. The couple stand kissing in the doorway, oblivious to everything but each other. A policeman walks slowly past the van as the driver gets out and goes to open the back. The policeman stops and looks at the Jaguar. In the back of the car, Joe and Eddie give each other worried sideways glances. The policeman slowly crosses the road and goes round to the driver's window.
Excuse me, sir. You can't park here.
Brave gives a tight smile and looks over at Mike. He turns back to the officer.
I'm sorry, officer.
What are you doing?
Rave shot the policeman. The kissing couple stop. Rave drives the Jaguar to the back of a van. The driver runs into the post office while Eddie grapples with a second post office worker, knocking him to the ground. Rave fires down the street at a dark figure.
Rave, cut out!
The couple stand frozen in the doorway. Two post office workers appear in the archway. Rave shoots at them while Eddie throws the sacks from the van down to Joe. A police car comes into the street, then quickly reverses as Rave opens fire. One of the officers in the car picks up a car telephone.
Hello, M2GW. Hello, M2GW. This is 4H calling. This is 4H calling. This is an all stations call.
Mike looks down the deserted street.
Come here!
Rave! The couple try to make a run for it, but Rave coldly fires at them and they duck back into the doorway. Two policemen creep forward and are also driven back by Rave's fire. Eddie looks out the back of the van and sees two police cars pull up, blocking the end of the street. Half a dozen officers get out. They dive for cover.
That's it.
Two more police cars block the other end of the street.
We can't make it in the car.
Then we'll have to take the alternative plan. Grab the sacks and meet me in the churchyard. Everything is arranged there. Mike and I will cover you.
Eddie and Joe grab the sacks.
Right, quick as you can.
They run across the road and into an alley. Rafe keeps firing, ensuring that none of the police follow Joe and Eddie. They pound through the streets and alleyways, the sacks in their hands. The figures moving in and out of the murky gloom as they pass under street lamps. They clamber up some stone steps and stop at the top, realizing they've missed the entrance to the graveyard. They return back down a few steps and slip through the columned entrance. Damp leaves are tossed up by the gentle night breeze as Eddie and Joe search for their way in between the ivy-covered monuments and gravestones. Outside the post office, Rafe turns furiously to Mike.
You wanted to take us? Why didn't you fire?
You said there'd be no firing.
Mike slams the car door and comes up close to Rafe.
I've always fought clean, Rafe. I'm going to give myself up.
Don't be a fool, Mike. They'll hang you.
I'll take a chance on that.
Mike steps out from behind the van. With a dark look at Rafe, he tosses the gun away and starts to walk down the street towards the police cars. A policeman holds up his arm to the other officers.
Hold it!
Rafe lifts his pistol. He shoots Mike in the back. Mike's body spins with the impact. He falls against the post office wall, then staggers back and collapses, his head hanging back over the curb, his hair trailing in the water-filled gutter. Rafe snatches up more sacks and legs it down the alley. Eddie and Joe are waiting nervously in the graveyard.
Eddie, I'm scared. What are we doing here? How did we ever get into this mess?
I don't know how we got into it. I know one thing, Joe. We're never going to get out of it.
Rafe runs into the graveyard and joins the other two. He squats behind a stone monument, his smooth face shiny with sweat. Outside the post office, the police move in. In the graveyard, Eddie and Joe watch Rafe.
Where's Mike?
Rafe looks away.
They've got him. Poor old Mike. I'd sooner any of us than he.
What happened? Couldn't you have helped him?
I tried to, but a stray bullet caught him.
Mike was a good guy. What's he doing dead out there?
Joe crouches close to Rafe.
You sure you tried to help him? Do you think maybe the money could be split three ways?
I wanted the money split four ways, too. But if it has to be split three ways, that's the way it's going to be.
We've got to get out of here.
What do we do with the money?
We'll bury it as planned.
Rafe levers out a stone panel in the monument he's hiding behind. The other two toss the sacks inside. In the streets nearby, the police are searching. Rafe cuts open one sack with a knife. The three men each pocket a packet of money. Rafe and Eddie push the stone panel back into place.
Here, take this.
We'll come back for the rest later.
I'm staying with you full time until we do.
Why? Don't you trust me, Eddie?
Sure I trust you. Like I trust myself.
The three men stand and look down at the monument.
Follow me.
They follow Rafe through the graveyard until they come to a fence. In the streets, the police are still searching. The men clamber over the fence and find themselves next to a railway junction. Trains rattle past as the men crouch low by the tracks. Joe swallows nervously as he watches the trains. He shoots a look at Eddie, who frowns as he peers across the tracks. Rafe crouches between them.
All right, boys. We go over one at a time. Which are the live rails? The middle one in every three. You go first, Joe.
Joe looks anxiously at Eddie.
Just watch yourself. You'll be all right.
I'll see you on the other side.
As another train rattles past, Joe picks his way over the rails, his body hunched low, his head constantly turning as he checks the coast is clear on both sides. The police are nearing the stone steps that lead to the graveyard. Joe is almost across the tracks. A heavy freight train passes slowly. Joe turns back and beckons to the others to follow. Rafe looks at Eddie.
Okay, Eddie. You go now.
Eddie looks hard at Rafe.
What's the matter? You scared? Just keep over the lines. You'll be all right.
It's not the lines I'm worried about.
All right. Follow me.
Brave stands up. More police clamber up the dimly lit stone steps to the graveyard. Joe reaches the far side of the tracks and stands panting as the other two start picking their way across. Rave waves his arm and they stop and crouch low as a train approaches. Rave's breathing heavily. Eddie watches the train with sharp eyes. They wait. Rave leans back onto his hands and kicks Eddie onto the electrified track. Joe steps forward, his face pale as he struggles to see what's happening. The train is gone and Rave stands up to continue his journey across, leaving Eddie's body lying on the tracks. Joe rushes forward.
Eddie!
Joe starts to climb back over the tracks to where Eddie's lying. Rave's nearly across. He pauses to call to Joe, then clambers over the last track.
Come on!
Joe looks around helplessly, then ducks down and follows Rave to the other side. He peers out into the night.
Come on!
Joe reluctantly follows Rave into the darkness. The police climb over the tracks to Eddie's body as the trains continue to rattle past. Joe follows Rave into a railway tunnel entrance. The figures are silhouetted against a light coming from inside. Both men pause as they hear a rumbling. They hurry over to the side of the tunnel and press themselves back against the wall. The two men squint against the dust as the train goes past. Rave looks towards the tunnel entrance and sees the shadowy figures of policemen. He turns to Joe.
We've only one chance. There's a station about a quarter of a mile down this tunnel.
Well, what happens if a train comes through?
Then we'll be joining Eddie and Mike. Come on!
They head into the tunnel. Joe and Rave jog at a steady pace. Their faces are lit up starkly each time they pass a tunnel light. As they disappear, the police officers move in. Rave and Joe stop jogging and strain towards the distant rumbling. Then quickly press themselves back against the wall as the train approaches. They stare at the train with wide eyes, then screw them tight shut and avert their faces as the train passes in front of them, a hair's breadth away from their rigid bodies. Two men look at each other, then continue down the tunnel. They emerge onto a tube platform with a London Underground sign saying High Street. They quickly slow their pace and walk along the platform as a train pulls in. The train stops and the automatic doors slide open. Rave takes a look up and down the platform, then they both get in and sit down opposite each other. Joe lolls in his seat with exhaustion and rubs his face. Rave watches out the window as the train pulls off, then relaxes a little.
I think we're safe now. You all right?
Joe casts him a dazed look.
What happened, Eddie?
He panicked when he saw that train coming. Tripped and fell over a light rail. I tried to save him, but it was too late.
Yeah. I tried to save Mike, too.
Why shouldn't Mike have been hit by a stray bullet? Why shouldn't Eddie have tripped?
But from now on, as long as I'm with you, I'm taking good care of myself.
Rave moves across and sits next to Joe. He leans in close.
There's £90,000 hidden in that churchyard back there, and you and I are the only two people in the world that know about it. How can I be sure you don't want that money for yourself?
I don't want any part of it. It's all yours. I got enough to get me and Mary back to the States, and I don't want any more.
Oh, no, Joe. We went into this thing together, and you're not walking out on me now. Come on, we've been in this train long enough.
The train stopped at a station. They both get out and start walking down the platform. Suddenly, Joe turns and runs back onto the train just as the automatic doors are closing. Rafe presses his hands against the doors in vain as Joe stands inside the carriage watching him. As the train starts to pull off, Rafe looks around in desperation. Then he realizes there's nothing he can do and his face resumes its icy calm. He walks down the platform. Joe lets himself into Mrs. Freeman's house. He shuts the front door and leans on it, rubbing his face wearily. As he lifts his head, Mary comes out of the living room in her dressing gown.
Oh, Joe, where have you been? I've been so worried.
Mary, get your things packed. We're going.
Going? Where?
Home. I've got seats on a plane leaving in 2 hours.
Her mother appears.
Oh, come on, let's get going.
Don't listen to him, Mary. Don't listen to him.
But, Joe, how can we go tonight? How did you get the tickets? How did you pay for them?
Joe starts packing.
Darling, you're not in trouble, are you?
Yes. Yes, that's it. He's in trouble with the police. They're after him. What did I tell you?
Get out of here, will you? Get out!
You see, Mary, you see? It's true.
Be quiet, Mother.
Mary looks Joe in the eye.
Darling, it is all right, isn't it?
You just got to trust me, Mary. There's not much time, and we've got to go.
Yes, Joe, but why tonight?
That's it. Either we go tonight or not at all. Please believe me.
Yes, Joe, I do, but...
Don't listen to him, Mary. He's lying. You can't leave me. You can't go away with him now.
Mrs. Freeman stands shaking in front of her daughter. Joe steps forward.
How about it, Mary?
He looks at his watch.
We got 15 minutes.
Mary looks from Joe to her mother, then walks between the two of them over to a cupboard. She reaches on top of it and takes down a suitcase. An airline taxis on a runway.
For passengers on VOAC Argonaut Flight 159 to Nairobi. Will you please have your passports ready and follow the green light to customs and immigration?
In the departures lounge, Eve is waiting for her husband. In another part of the lounge, Joe and Mary wait.
How much longer are they going to be?
He looks out of a window onto the runway. Mary joins him.
Passengers on Pan American Flight 201 to New York, please proceed to the plane.
That's us, darling. We're on our way.
I gotta put something right before I leave the country. I have to make a phone call.
But, Joe, we'll miss the plane.
No, you go ahead. Grab the seats.
No, I'll wait here. I don't like you to leave me.
He looks into her face.
We'll never leave each other again once we get on that plane.
All right. But hurry.
Give me the police. Hello? Yeah. Never mind my name and address. I just want to tell you where the money from the post office raid is hidden. No, I'm not giving any names. I just want the money to be returned. Okay. I take down this address.
Joe stops and slowly lets the receiver fall. Rafe stands smiling at him outside the phone booth. Rafe moves round to the door and slips into the booth with Joe, pulling the door shut behind him. He takes the receiver out of Joe's hand and replaces it in its cradle. Joe's hand moves down to his raincoat pocket. Rafe points a gun at him. Eve's waiting outside her plane. She casts a sad look back at the departures lounge. Inside, Mary paces up and down, holding her coat and bag. Inside the booth, a shot is fired. The two men remain standing. Joe opens the door. Rafe leans against the side of the booth, his head drooped on one side. Then he falls forward onto the floor, still holding his gun, writhing slightly. Joe steps over him and starts to walk away. Rave lifts his gun with difficulty and takes aim. He fires. The gun falls from his hand as he smiles with delight. Then his eyes close and his head drops to the floor. His body lies sprawled next to a sign with an arrow reading, "This way out." Eve's still waiting.
"I'm sorry, madam, but we can't wait any longer. Would you mind going on board now?"
Eve gazes out for a moment longer, then turns towards the plane. In the lounge, Mary looks at her watch. Joe comes through the door, walking stiffly.
Mary.
Joe.
He clasps her tight, wincing with pain.
"Darling, I thought you'd left me. Come on, everyone's waiting in the plane.
Let's go."
They walk out onto the tarmac. The wind ruffles their hair as Joe looks at the plane only a short walk away. They set off towards it. Joe is having difficulty walking, beads of sweat breaking out on his forehead. He struggles to smile at Mary. He screws up his face with pain and squints at the aeroplane, which now seems nearer. He stops walking. Mary looks at him with concern.
"Joe! Joe, what is it?"
He collapses on the tarmac.
"Joe!"
She kneels by his side.
"Mary. Mary."
He struggles to breathe.
"It's not much time before they come. I can't make the plane. You go."
"But what is it? What's happened?"
Joe pulls his blooded hand from his pocket.
"You're bleeding."
"I just got mixed up with the wrong guy. Took a chance. Didn't work out. I love you, Mary. I love you very much. I wish..."
He strains to lift his head, but it drops to one side, his eyes closed.
"Joe!"
Mary drops her head onto his chest as the money from his pocket is picked up by the wind and blown across the tarmac.
"Four men. Four women. Four dead men."
The graveyard.
"Buried here forever is what they thought they died for. £90,000. An illusion called money, which in the end would really have helped none of them. Would it?"
The End, ITFC audio description by Claire LeMay, was read by James O'Hara.